Steve Kerr. What a odd time for him to join us. The Golden State Warriors head coach, good enough for a weekly conversation, and we are always pleased to welcome you in here. No Kolsky today. It's just me and Ray. Steve, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. Thank you so much. Hey, it was a rough one last night in Minnesota, and we'll get into some details there for a second. Can I thank you for the Christmas Day present you gave us? That was awesome.
Yeah, let's just keep talking about that game instead.
Yeah, well, this is the first time I've been back. It's like our second show since Christmas. I've not talked to you since that game. That was great. Like, that was awesome. How did that come together? Because you just hate the Rockets that much?
Pretty much, yeah. No, you know what? I think in a season like this, when things don't go great and you're not winning a ton of games, you get an opportunity like that on Christmas Day to play a home game on national TV. It's, you know, that's as big as it gets. So our guys were up for it. The game probably meant more to us than it did to Houston, and I think it showed.
I'm guessing you and Joe Lacob and Bob Myers, you haven't had an awful lot of like, hey, you guys, remember us? Like that just from a personal standpoint had to be a nice little Christmas gift to yourself.
Well, it was a fun day. I think more than anything, we felt good for our players and our fans. I mean, it's, you know, we've had such a great run the last 5 years. Everybody's been so excited about, you know, all the good times, all the great games. But, you know, for our fans on Christmas Day to see that kind of energy, that kind of performance from all these young guys, and for them to be rewarded for all the work that they've done, I think that was the main thing.
Since I'm basically the designated bring down guy, last night's game, do you just chalk that up to nothing ever going right? Or did you see things that might have pleased you initially, but frustrated you even more? And the thing that I'm thinking of is you held Minnesota under 100, which is normally a sign of good defense, but you still got beat by 15. How do you parse that out?
Well, it's I think the easy way to explain it is that we have a very small margin for error this year. And, you know, the past 5 years, those teams could win games when the ball wasn't going into the hoop just because we had a lot of talent. We'd find a stretch of the game where, you know, Steph or Clay would make three straight threes and we'd turn what was a bad game into a, you know, into a small lead. And then we could kind of build from there, get a few stops in a row and close the game out and walk away not feeling great, but with a victory. You know, we don't have that type of margin for error now. And last night was a game where nothing would go in. I think we were 3-for-20 from the 3-point line. Seemed like every time we got a little bit of momentum, we just couldn't make a shot. And so it was just one of those nights. And Minnesota's been playing well. They played Milwaukee down to a, you know, one possession game in Milwaukee the night before, so they had some confidence, and they just outplayed us. So it is what it is this year.
You know, no Wiggins, no Towns. When another team is without its gold standards, does that make it a little bit odd to prepare for them? Because you go in expecting one thing, and now you're getting them playing left-handed all night as well, and you're playing left-handed as it is.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think that's more of a factor when you have your full team, you know, and
sure,
you're kind of, you know, maybe letting your guard down. I didn't feel like we let our guard down at all last night. I felt like we just got outplayed and we just weren't clicking, and it was disappointing because I think we came off a really good stretch of games. I thought the San Antonio game the other night, despite the loss, was a really well played game, and so, you know, I've been pleased with the effort and the production and the performance over the last couple weeks, and then last night hopefully was just a blip, and let's get back to playing at a better level tomorrow against Detroit.
I thought that the first half, was it against Dallas? It was just bonk. I don't think either team missed a shot.
That was incredible. The level of skill to start that game between D'Angelo and Luka going back and forth, it was just high-level stuff, crazy. And they just wore us down. They had one of those nights where everybody was knocking down shots. But that first half was something to watch.
Steve, obviously D'Angelo gave us all quite a scare there, and I'm glad everything's okay. But he's not all the way okay. How's he doing? And might he be back in the mix tomorrow against Detroit?
Well, he's just day to day. He was still pretty sore yesterday when I talked to him. So we'll see. I'd probably say he's doubtful for tomorrow, and we'll hope he'll be ready for Sacramento Monday. But we'll just take it day by day and see where it goes.
We had Eric Paschal on earlier today, and he talked in sort of vague terms about the wall that rookies and sometimes second year players hit. When you've got as many young players as you do, do you see signs that the wall is hitting everybody at about the same time, or is that sort of overthinking?
I think it's a little different. I think for Eric, he played heavy minutes and played at a really high level early on, and teams started making adjustments over the last month, and then he got banged up. And so the rookie wall felt like it hit Eric in the last couple of weeks. But the circumstances are different for everybody, you know. I just think that with his circumstances, he was probably due for this kind of stretch, and hopefully last night will help him kind of get back on track. I thought he had a good night. He had an aggressive night, and I would look for him to become, you know, more a part of the rotation again after these past couple of weeks where he's been knocked out with some injuries.
Steve, we got to see the debut of Alan Smilagic. What'd you think of his minutes, and when might we see him again?
Smiley's been great. You know, he's really well-liked by his teammates. I think everybody appreciates how much confidence he has in himself. You know, he just genuinely believes like he belongs, and he just turned 19. I mean, he's just a kid, and he really doesn't know what's going on out there. I mean, he's still trying to figure it all out, but it doesn't deter him from being aggressive and looking like he's ready to roll. So we all appreciate that about him, and now it's just a matter of continuing to play and gain the experience that he needs.
You talked about wanting to see the league get back to the point where players actually earn the fouls that are called. This is a wild concept from an out-of-the-box thinker. How dare you?
I really did go out on a limb there, didn't I? This is something that I talk about a lot and that I think the league has had to wrestle with the last couple of years because, you know, the league has done a really good job over the last 15 years, 20 years of opening up the game, you know, letting the players show their athleticism and their skill by loosening up some of the rules and, you know, making it a little easier on the offensive player. But what's happened, the rebound effect of that is that players are really doing their best to fool the officials now. And they're getting away with all kinds of stuff. And it's the coaches are all unanimous with this stuff. None of us can stand some of the calls that are being made. And we bring this stuff up, and it's discussed amongst the league. And to me, it's just time. You know, the league always has to be changing and evolving. And to me, it's just time. It's a natural time to sort of reevaluate and get back to, you know, making the offensive player earn it rather than kind of handing out these free throws.
I mean, I remember when on-court skullduggery was basically like Horace Grant pulling the chair out from underneath another big man.
there's always been stuff. You know, players are always going to test the boundaries that the officials lay out there, and you know, you try to get away with stuff. But I think we've gotten to the point where over the last couple of years we've rewarded players for some of that stuff, creating fouls that aren't really there.
Anyone in particular?
You know, I know where you're going with this. The reality is there's a ton of players who are doing this. And it's not one guy. It's it's just the nature of the game, and that the scores are getting higher, and we're trying to generate offense. But fans want competition too. They want to see the defense able to compete. And so it's not huge rule changes. I just want to see interpretations of the rules maybe altered a little bit, and just subtle stuff. I mean, that's all. I think the league's done a phenomenal job over the like I said, over the last 15 years or so. But I think we've gone a little too far. That's all.
Is the resistance to fixing the problem more in the hands of the officials on the floor, or is it in the league office that maybe wants this to be the way it is? What is your sense of that?
I think there's always a little wariness to change anything that's going well. You know, as long as the league is popular, there's a resistance to alter anything. And that's fair. It's just that we can also be a step ahead, you know, of things going poorly, and we have to be prescient about what we think is coming. And to me, what I think fans want to see more than anything is just high level competition. You know, they want to see two teams going at it, and they don't want to see a parade to the foul line, and they don't want to see a million replays. And so if things start to go south for the league in any way, in terms of viewership or, you know, sponsorship, sales, ticket sales, that kind of stuff, well, then it's time to, you know, you have to look ahead and try to predict all that stuff. And that's what the league always tries to do.
When you retire from coaching, would you like to run the league's Department of Prescience?
I'm in. How much does it pay?
Well, it's the league job, so probably about 50 grand.
Okay, fair enough.
You'd have to dip into your IRA.
No doubt.
Steve, I heard some comments you made about David Stern and what a shrewd negotiator he was, and he would dominate a boardroom table the way Michael Jordan would dominate the court. When he passed away, what was your first thought?
I think just how many people he impacted in the NBA, how many jobs exist because of him, how big franchises have become because of the way he marketed the game and the way the game grew under his leadership. And then I thought of all the times we got completely destroyed in labor negotiations because he just dominated the room when I was part of the union, and we were having lockouts. He was just the dominant figure in the room.
Is there a particular thorn that you tried to put in his side that you remember him destroying?
It was impossible to put a thorn in his side. He was prepared for every single thought or every word you had. Didn't matter. He knew exactly what to say. The guy was so shrewd and just a step ahead of the game every time. But, you know, in the end, it was everything was for the good of the game. And what was interesting about David Stern was it felt like he was the owner's boss. You know, even when in those labor meetings, you know, even though the owners hired him, you know, technically he worked for them, it always felt like they worked for him.
Yeah, and that's the last of the breed. There is not going to be another commissioner like that ever again.
No, that's impossible. It's impossible these days. But it was really interesting to watch him in action behind the scenes. He just dominated.
Did you ever get crossways with him when you were a general manager in Phoenix?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think he was annoyed with me a couple times when I was in the media making comments, probably something like the one I just made about the officiating or something. He could get annoyed very easily with people in the media. And So I remember him being upset with a couple of things I said, but that was all part of it.
We spoke with Rick Welts yesterday. Rick said that he had him out to a home that he bought in Palm Desert, I believe. And basically, David Stern just came over and criticized the grout work for 2 hours.
Doesn't surprise me.
Look, Steve, the last thing we need is another avenue to talk about how great Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are, especially when they're not even playing. But, man, let me tell you, the difference in the franchise that you have, in the team that you have, in the locker room that you have, and the way that these guys react to moments sitting in their civilian clothes, tailor-made, by the way, their clothes on the bed. I don't think I've ever seen NBA superstars relegated to I'm injured and not playing embrace the role of bench mob the way that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson have, especially during that 4-game winning streak over the holidays where they were giddy. Like they were season ticket holders who've been waiting to see this at Chase all year.
Yeah, and our guys need to see that too. You know, they our young guys love having Steph and Klay around, and when they get that kind of support from our stars, it makes a big difference. They feel it.
Do you think Curry and Thompson are just trying to cut into some of that fat coaches money you guys throw around?
Some of that what?
That fat coaches money.
Something like that. Yeah, I'm sure they're really hurting for cash.
I was hoping you'd run with that a little more, but yeah. We can live with it.
Okay, let's get on to one fun, easy one. We were talking earlier about we had Michael Irvin on. And we were talking about how the Dallas Cowboys are making a coaching decision as slow as molasses, but it looks like it's coming. And here's what Michael Irvin said the Dallas Cowboys needed.
They're looking for their Kerr. Golden State had everything they needed. Kerr came in and put everybody in the right position, and a dynasty was built. But they had everything they needed, even I think before that. And that's where Dallas is right now. They're looking for their Steve Kerr.
If Jerry Jones called, Steve, what's the number? What's the walk-away number?
I don't know, but I'm flattered right now. Feeling pretty good about things.
You should.
Michael Irvin.
You should. That's the Hall of Famer, the playmaker, saying his team needs a Steve Kerr-like hire.
I love it.
Or maybe what he's saying is he'd like to see you have to try to work with Jerry Jones.
Yeah, that'd be more like it. Oh, man.
We appreciate your time as always, Steve. Thank you very much.